I'm going to let you guys just introduce yourselves just to make sure that we get this right. So we have Hazel Hill.
Good morning. My name is Hazel Hill, and I'm a spokeswoman for the Six Nations Land Reclamation, formerly known as Douglas Creek Estates, and what we now call Gunnestado, which means the protected place.
And we have Nanda Hill back with us.
I'm Nanda from Onondaga Beaver Clan.
So we're here to maybe give your side of the story, or the Six Nations side of the story, and also to clarify some of the rumors that we have heard about, there's so many things. I don't even know where to start. I guess the most recent thing that we've been hearing about is to do with the assault of the police officer. That day, that fateful day, when a couple apparently pulled up to the gate or the barrier line, had some words with some Native, I don't want to say they were protesters, but people that were there at the gate line. And then things got out of control, and then the car was chased into the nearby parking lot, and then there was a cameraman that got injured, and he was saying the LPP did not do anything to help him. And now we're hearing different versions of that story. I think maybe that would be one of the first ones to clear up.
Okay, maybe I'll start. That morning, the old couple pulled up to the front gate on Argyle Street, and they stopped to talk to Audra. They actually stopped her. And words were exchanged. I mean, they came in very aggressively, you know, saying racial things to her and tried to grab her arm. And she called over for the men to come and help her. And so when the men approached the car, you know, took off, spun away, and drove right directly at the two of our people and actually hit one of them in the leg. And they turned and did a U-ey and went hidden up to the Canadian Tire parking lot. From that point, then obviously the one that was injured and a couple of the people followed them, and thinking that they were going to get the OPP to address the fact that one of our men had been hit by this car. The OPP were parked in the church parking lot, which is just a few, not too far down the road, just like not even a quarter mile.
Could they have seen any of that altercation?
Well, they probably should have. They've not ever said that they did. And that was one of the reasons that they're parked there, is so that they can view any kind of altercations or incidents that are happening. Anyway, our people followed the couple up to the Canadian Tire parking lot. They talked to the OPP. There was more stationed there. They, you know, they gave their version of the story. And then during all of that, by that time, my husband and I had gotten the call that there was an incident. We, you know, we asked the people, don't do nothing, just stay still and we'll be right there, and which they did. They obliged. We got there. We spoke to the OPP officers. The Six Nations police were called, because at that point, we were trying to work on a liaison between the Six Nations police and the OPP so that things would be a lot clearer and people would be able to see both sides of the story. So when we got all that settled, the older couple were already gone when we got there. They were already taken from their car, and the police had taken them away from the site. And so it was arranged that the vehicle was taken to the reclamation site until, you know, further up follow-up on the investigation could be done, whether charges were going to be laid against the old couple, statements were to be given, that kind of thing. And during this process, then, is when the CH cameraman was noticed over, you know, taping the whole thing, and some of the men, because we've already had a problem with CHTV. There's been a lot of slanted stories being put out there, and the people at the reclamation site had made a decision that they weren't going to be doing interviews with CH at this time. They weren't going to be giving them the opportunity because they take what we say and they distort it. So the people at that point, some of the men approached the guy and asked him to please stop filming, you know, take out, you know, give us the film, whatever. And then this little scuffle ensued. And I was right there. I myself went over to try and stop it. The OPP were right in the middle of it. They were trying to stop it. And so all of this happened, and we brought our men back.
So you did see OPP trying to break up a scuffle?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And are the papers in Hamilton Spectator and the CH and 900 AM radio here, they're all saying that the police didn't do anything? And this seems to be the mainstay complaint for Ken Hewitt and his citizens group in Caledonia. Let's rally against the OPP. They didn't stand up for this poor cameraman.
Yeah, and I don't know why they're saying it, because I know that one of the local newspapers, Turtle Island News, had a perfect shot of the OPP right in the midst of that whole scuffle, with trying to grab people and pull them back from each other, because things were happening from both sides. The cameraman himself was one throwing punches first. You know, our guys were just trying to ask them to stop give us the tape and we're fine. You know, we don't want you taking...
They were just trying to get the camera. They weren't actually hitting him.
No,
they were
no.
just wanting the camera.
Right. And it was like, and nobody did anything. They didn't smash the camera. They took the camera. They took the tape out and give the camera back is okay. basically what
well,
happened.
You know what we saw was some amateur footage taken from across the road
mm-hmm.
by somebody who just happened to be there.
That's right.
And the footage he showed over and over again doesn't really show a fight. It just shows a lot of people huddled together and a Native person walking away with a tripod.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that proves.
Right.
He's trying to say that that does prove that there was no OPP intervention.
Right. And like I said, I've got pictures. We've seen pictures where the OPP were right in the middle of it. And even up until last night, we've had a fellow come forward that is going to get the information specifically, but one of the OPP officers did admit that during that scuffle, his billy club probably hit that cameraman in the head, and that's how the cut and the stitches came out of it. It wasn't from our men beating on this poor, helpless cameraman. It was the police trying to break up a scuffle between two people.
Right. Now, I wonder, is that OPP, he has to make a written statement. Are we ever going to see that?
I'm hoping. I've asked the fellow to contact him again. He said he spoke to the officer himself, and I've asked him to get that in writing or something, because we need that verification. We need that proof. The other thing that we've talked about at the fire recently and we're working on getting the proof of as well is that the elderly couple has some sort of relation to the cameraman himself. There's a lady in the church that one of our people's daughter-in-law attends, and she told her that her brother-in-law was the man driving the car and that the cameraman was her nephew. So somewhere in there is a little triangle of people that, you know, we've said all along it was a setup, and we're working on our own investigation. That's what we do.
It sure does look like a setup. Now, we're talking charges. There were serious charges being laid. The OPP, apparently, one of the officers around the other side was attacked or somebody tried to run over him. This is where we get the attempted murder charge?
Can yeah.
we clear that up?
Sure. That came after the incident at Canadian Tire, and what that was is the SUV, it was the U.S. Border Patrol vehicle, was spotted at the front gate again, taking pictures, and when the men seen this vehicle, like they took off, they sped out and they took off, and they went around to the back part of the site on Braymore Ave or whatever that street is called at the back there. And when the men approached them to find out what they were doing, why the U.S. Border Patrol was there, the one OPP officer was jumping out of the car while it was moving, so henceforth he got hurt in doing that. But also, too, when the men went to take the vehicle, because that was part of, they were retrieving that vehicle for our investigative purposes. We have a right to know what they're doing. They're right here. They're investigating us. They've got us under surveillance. They've got all this equipment in the car. So they took the vehicle to do their own investigation. And while they were backing up, apparently the officer was behind him. And that's where the attempted murder charge comes in. It wasn't intentional. It was during them taking the vehicle. Well, the first reports that we had from the liaison officers that we speak to was that he had internal injuries and that he had a broken arm and a concussion. Later on, it was more revised to a broken wrist or something, and I'm not sure about the internal injuries. But again, like I said, the people that were there at the site, some of the women that witnessed everything, said he jumped out of a moving vehicle, and you could possibly break your wrist from jumping out of a moving vehicle, you know.
Like I say, you know, down here in the city of Hamilton, we're hearing so much biased media that's not clear. I myself have been up there watching events and listening to people talking to the press, and I would hear things that were just blatantly untrue.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of that going on right now.
Last time we had Nanda in, she was talking about what it was like to be behind the barricades and what it's like to live up there. Has it gotten worse, Nanda?
Yeah, I think... Just with everything that's happening, the media slant, and especially with this situation with our people coming under some kind of a staged attack and being set up to take a fall in front of the cameras, has been really emotionally strenuous and draining for a lot of people that are there. I know for myself that the day that happened, I wasn't at the reclamation site. I was at home and I sat down to watch the news, and which I guess is kind of self-torture.
Watching Channel 11?
Yeah, Channel 11. And just to see that it seems like no matter what we do, there's always this force that's that's coming at us trying to undermine standing for our sovereignty. People, you know, refer to it as a fight, but really all we're doing is standing up for our independence. And it's very confusing as a member of the Six Nations to see that when we just try and stand, and we just try and stand united, and we just try and stand up for those children that are unborn, the kind of opposing forces that we come against, I don't understand it. I've been really trying to sort of balance out my emotions, but I find that it's starting to become overwhelming. I think I kind of lost it that night. I cried a lot, and I was very, very hurt in the most
I would say deep in your soul as well.
Yeah, yeah.
It was very deep in your core. It's not just an insult. This is, you know, I hate to make this kind of comparison, but it sort of reminds me of how the Jews must have felt when the Germans were basically trying to erase them mm-hmm. as a race. And maybe that's going too far. But this seems to be a slow, steady, just let's erase everything that the First Nations people say and do and, you know, erase what they say. That's what it seems to be like to me when I'm watching this, because I just see everything so one-sided. And last night I was watching Michael Corrin's show, and he had on the liberal and the conservative provincial members of government, and he had Ken Hewitt, who is the leader of the Citizens Committee up there in Caledonia. And Ken was basically calling all the First Nations people bullies. He said, funny, I heard this before, eh? And he was basically saying that the natives were a bunch of bullies, and, you know, and he's a very insightful fellow when it comes to getting people angry. And halfway through the conversation, Michael Corrin himself says, I don't know. I mean, if I lived there and it was one of my houses in that development, I'd be bloody mad. And Ken Hewitt's going on and on saying how they're now against the OPP and they've got to go and push the government and people just have to get off that land. And at one point, Michael Corrin made a point of saying to the camera, we've invited people from Six Nations to come and speak tonight on this show or speak on my show. And nobody came back. So, you know, now I'm hearing that it was slightly different. Yeah, maybe we can just briefly talk about that show, Hazel.
Sure, I'll fill you in on that. That it was arranged that some of our people, one of the delegates that sit on the negotiating team, Leroy Hill, he's a sub-chief, it was arranged for him to attend. However, a meeting got called with James Stewart yesterday morning to do with the reclamation, and so he had to put his priorities in place. And it's not like we didn't want to be there. It's not like we deliberately didn't show. They called me at 10 o'clock and asked me if I could come, and there was no way I could get there by an 11 o'clock showing. So, and I'm just going to go back, Maggie, to what you talked about, too, as far as you know, comparison with the Jews and the Germans. And I think you're absolutely right, and what Nanta's saying here is that to see what we're doing and how it started, it's a peaceful reclamation. We have a right. We have the inherent right to stand A in protecting of our land with respect to that great law that we speak about, that Gaianlaq Goa. It's our responsibility to uphold those duties, and part of it is protecting the land, the people, our sovereignty, and it's a whole complex situation that's been ongoing for a couple hundred years. It's not something that's just reared its head in the last 100 and whatever days we're at here. And the Six Nations Confederacy Council, you know, when they were ousted in 1924, so they've had 80-something years of the elective band system there, so it's a whole resurgence of our identities, our responsibilities as a sovereign people, And the federal government will stop at nothing to make sure that we're portrayed as the bad guys, to make sure that we're looked at as this lawless bunch of people. And that's why, like I said, it doesn't surprise me one bit that situation that happened with the elderly couple and the CH cameraman was a big setup. We've said it right from the beginning. Through our investigation, we're learning that that's a very big possibility that it is true, and we're just putting the pieces of the puzzle together. As far as Ken Hewitt and his inciting, absolutely. He's a very he's a man that portrays himself as this, you know, wonderful person that's, you know, aligning all the Caledonia people. But basically what they're doing, and I've seen it from the minutes of their meeting, the citizens, Caledonia Citizens Alliance meeting, where they've outlined their strategy. And their strategy as far as intimidation and inciting trouble with the people of Six Nations is to bring their children to the fence line of this schoolyard. So they're using their children to come in on the pretense of, oh, we're just out here having fun, you know, what are they doing? Why are they coming to the fence in the first place? Why would you take your children there if you're so afraid? Mm-hmm. If we are such an awful people, if we're there with guns, if we're there with all this stuff, why would you take your children there in the first place? Part of their plan is to create chaos, call 911, create the situation where it looks like, you know, you're fearing for your life. And they have it right in there that the Caledonia people are thinking of arming themselves now and that they've got the nod of approval from the OPP, which is crap. We've talked to the OPP and said, look, at this is what your citizens are saying. You know, do something about this. We're over here. We're unarmed. We've been peaceful. We're standing here. And when those situations, like with after that Friday incident and all that stuff and the Caledonia people came to that fence line, the insults that were being thrown from their side. They were hollering white power. They were telling us to go on, get our welfare checks, telling us all these kinds of things like that. They don't know who we are as a people. They have no idea. They're over there drinking. They're throwing bottles. They were throwing rocks. And our people stood there calmly. You know, sometimes people would respond, but the majority of our people, we just kept telling them, you know, just ignore it. Let it go. Let it. And that's what we've been doing. We've been taking all their crap. I had an email sent to me, this lady, Beth Hutchinson, was so afraid. She's seen us digging bunkers. She's seen us lowering these big crates of ammunition into the ground. And I'm like, oh my God, where do these people get this kind of stuff from? And how? Like, it was put in local newspapers. They put it in the Brantford Expositor. And my question to some of the reporters is like, don't you people have to get the facts before you print something like that? Isn't there some sort of an investigation? And if that was really true, don't you think the OPP would have moved in on us? You know, yeah. They're giving a criticism to the OPP, Ken Hewitt, and all of those Caledonia Alliance people are criticizing the OPP in all the situations that's ever come up, including the May 24 weekend when the standoff there and that little fight ensued. The OPP were there not to restrain us. They were there to restrain those Caledonia people to try and stop them from inciting a war, is what they seem to want.
I'd like to back up to the Hydro story. Now, there's a serious turn of events. That's that business with the, I don't know if it was the 24th of May weekend, maybe it was. It was actually no. It was the day that the first the main roadblock.
Okay.
And I mean, here we go again. We got people like Ken Hewitt in the Citizens of Caledonia business, and the natives say, "Okay, we've come to an agreement. We removed the roadblock, and immediately we have." Well, I hate to use the term "redneck white trash," but that's what they look like, acting like bullies in a schoolyard. Not thinking, saying the most stupid, moronic things, just embarrassing to me as a member of that race, just an embarrassing situation. And it's just things just escalated out of control. And then all of a sudden, the power goes out. And we got calls at this station from people on the Six Nations saying, do you know what's going on? We lost our power. And I called somebody that I know that manages the McDonald's right there. And he said something to me off the top of his head, and he's a Caledonia resident. He said, well, you know, I won't say the comparison he made because it was just ridiculous, but what he was saying is there's no doubt in his mind that it was a native person that took away the hydro. Well, maybe it was, and maybe it wasn't. But the point he didn't get, which to me was glaringly obvious, it wasn't just the white people that lost their hydro. It was everybody that lost their hydro. And that's the kind of thinking I've been hearing. So maybe we can go back to that hydro event and see if we can clarify that.
Sure. I'll try and clarify that as much as I can. It started early in the morning. Like we said, we had the barricades down. And what people don't realize is that the barricades were down on number 6, the road that... There was two barricades on Argyle Street. One was at the 6th line and one was up by the church. So through the night, we had taken the one down from the 6th line, and that was wide open. The end where the number 6 bypass was patrolled by the police only. And so that whole area where the hydro tower or station or whatever it was that was damaged was open to anybody to get there. And our people... were at the front where the church area was. We had removed our barricades and we're standing there scratching our head basically saying, what's going on? Why are these people, now the Caledonia people have a barricade up. They've surrounded, and if you want to talk about swarming a car as they've described what happened with that elderly couple, let's talk about that. Those people, they swarmed the car of this elderly man and woman who were going to go attend the Bread and Cheese. He was going to pick up his family in Hamilton, and they surrounded that car. They were hitting the car. They broke a window. And, so that was going on. And our representatives, like a couple of the spokespeople, Clyde Paulus and a few others, went to go to their aid. It's like, what the heck is going on? The police are there and all these Caledonia people there. And in the first place, we're trying to figure out why they didn't want the road open. This is one of the things that they've been hollering about. And so we open the road and then this happens, right? So then they're there with their barricade of people. They've surrounded one of our elderly couples. And they were, you know, very viciously attacking these people, not so much as them, but the car. And they were hollering at the OPP.
Reminded me of Oka.
Yeah, and, absolutely. And the Shattagi people. And, yeah. And this is the thing that we are trying to get across to the Caledonia people. Our fight isn't with Caledonia. It's not anything to do with them. It's about our sovereignty. It's about our land base. And we do have a right to stand up and protect the land, what little bit we have left, because it's all been usurped through the federal government's dirty dealings. Mm-hmm. And so when that happened and all this chaos is going on and we're all at the front line, the whole back area where that hydro thing is wide open to anybody, and the first clue that we had that the power was out when we noticed the streetlights, and to be honest with you, I thought they're going to bring the army in. I thought it was a plan from the government side that they were going to come and attack and take us out. And we didn't have a clue that it was going on until somebody turned around and seen the smoke. So, and for Marie Traynor, this so-called politician that everybody's praising up, for her to be standing there saying she knows for a fact that a Native person did it, I would, you know, I would really like to challenge her, because we've had witnesses of all kinds of traffic, you know, coming from that number six. They thought the road was open as well. So don't tell me that you know for a fact when nobody does. I don't know. I wasn't at that hydro station. I was at the front lines trying to figure out why Caledonia didn't want the road open when we had opened it up as per our agreement.
Yeah, and that's the kind of thinking that I was describing. So, yeah, they did it just in retaliation, as if to say, okay, you inconvenienced us with a roadblock. So now we're going to teach you how it feels like. This is how it feels. It's just so childish. Mm-hmm. And the person that I was talking to that was losing his meat and his business and that, okay, yeah, he's losing some money, but he's getting compensated by the government.
Sure they are.
So they're... now they have monthly checks coming in.
Yeah. Way to go, Marie.
Yeah.
And the other thing of it, too, is like, with that, like, I mean, everybody lost things. A lot of our elderly people, we had elderly people that live on life support, things like that. Nobody would have done anything like that intentionally to harm anyone. And that's the message that they're trying to get out there, is that our people, again, are a lawless bunch of people. And they're trying to inflame this terrorist type of mentality out there in the media. And it really angers me, because all in the last few weeks since all this, the Canadian terrorist stuff has been on the news, and I can't remember the people involved, but it was like it's been shown in the Brampton court. And if you look and watch how they play that, they'll play the Brampton court terrorist people, Canada, blah, 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 and right back to back come Six Nations and the Caledonia Reclamation Site.
I've noticed that, yeah.
So they're deliberately manipulating the minds of Canadian people and the terrorist movement. What they see is, A, you've got terrorists here, and B, you've got terrorists here at Six Nations. And again, like I said, it's what do you call that, where the brainwashing of Canadian people to believe that we're terrorists, and this is the actions that they have to take to resolve this.
Well, it looks to me like a plan.
It is.
It looks like the whole thing's a plan. When you see the events unfolding, we know that they have more control of the media. We obviously have seen that, especially the independent media and stations like CFMU and CKRZ. We see a different side of the picture, because we don't have a corporate agenda.
Exactly.
We don't have somebody paying a bill saying, you're not going to get that on. Now, I'm not suggesting that that's what's going on here, but something is systematically happening, and it's the developers that always win. Now, here's another thing, and I'm jumping ahead because I wanted to get to this later, but I wanted to just point out that Dalton McGuinty, who a lot of these citizen action vigilante types like Ken Hewitt like to point the finger at, and different parties, you know, politicians will be politicians no matter what level they're on. And he is giving the developers, the Henko, or the Henning brothers, the Henko development, all this money. Nobody's going to find out what the money is. We have Judge Marshall, who has a conflict of interest that everybody has managed to overlook, which just amazes me. I don't understand that. And how it's not talked about. He owns some of that land. Mm-hmm. And we have stories, other developers are going to come in the future. So if it's not the Henning Brothers and Henco, it's going to be some other development because we need our, you know, we're going to expand by 200,000 people in 25 years. Mm-hmm. And Dalton's got his Places to Grow business. So ironically, Dalton brings his Places to Grow press releases back up to the front page and talks about the Golden Horseshoe. Meanwhile, he hands the developers up there in Six Nations a big whack of money that nobody's supposed to know about, even though it's taxpayers' dollars mm-hmm. that's paying for it. And I'm thinking, and what are the First Nations getting out of this outside of a shaft job? Now, I do remember reading someplace that that was allocated as 1 million acres. I don't know how many acres are left. But that's urban sprawl. This is how it, you know, when you see it played out in other areas where it's fruit farmers, it's still urban sprawl. It's control of the media. It's a setup. It's like if Ken Hewitt and his people can say the OPP are not protecting us, therefore up the vigilante and we have to go to the politicians. They set a situation up to allow themselves to make a whack of money. What do you guys get out of it?
Absolutely nothing so far. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's been talked about, too. And the bottom line is our people from the beginning have said this isn't about money. It's about who we are as a people.
And
it's about our
land.
And the protecting of that land. And there was a story in the papers, I think it was a Spectator recently, where another developer mentioned that he's going to be developing over on McClung Road mm-hmm. and that the native occupations do not deter him, I guess, basically what he was saying. And the fact of the matter is, and we've said it right all along, is that that whole Haldimand, that 1 million acres that you talked about originally was 900 and whatever, how many thousand, close to 1 million acres, and we're down to probably, what did they say, not even a fifth of that anyway, like 5% of that land base. And we are, we do have an interest in that. We do have an interest in all of that land. And we've always said we're not there to kick anybody out of their homes. But the fact of the matter is that there's been a lot of dirty dealings. I mean, speaking to a woman that works in the Ottawa archives recently, and she tells you know that how obvious it's been the Privy Council will take land, what they call a surplus land, belonging to the natives and transfer it to other parties because and they say that the natives show no interest in it. Well, that's garbage. We've shown an interest all these years and we've tried to play by their rules through the Indian Act Council and through their lands claim process. It doesn't work. You have nations of people that have land claims in there for over 100 years. Where do you get resolution? And that's the unfortunate part. And what happened here is a very good example of that. The government will not listen until some sort of action is taken. And like I said, it's been a peaceful demonstration. It's been a peaceful reclamation from the beginning. And the opposition is coming because Canada doesn't want to deal with our people. They don't want to look at the land because somewhere they're going to have to admit that they're guilty of the biggest white collar crime in history of mm-hmm. Canada. They stole it. They continually to steal it. They continue to sell it. And that's against the law and then your laws.
Yeah, it's amazing to me how they can just ironically, you know, manipulate the finances of this land that apparently he didn't own.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't get it. I do get one thing, though. That this is colonialism, and it doesn't stop. And the way we've been growing in this country with urban sprawl, it all has to stop. And I, for one, am grateful that First Nations people stand up for these lands because there won't be any land left.
That's right.
And saying that you've only got one-fifth or 15% of those lands left what they're saying about the natives aren't using the land, well, that's the white man's concept. You don't have to have a house and a road on it, you know, to say that the land's being used.
Or milk it for what it's worth.
Exactly.
Right? Right.
Or steal the water or whatever.
Chop down the trees.
Exactly.
Right.
I mean, here's a lesson we need to keep preaching out there.
Mm-hmm.
Land is not ours to exploit.
That's right. And just because it's sitting there, like you said, in its naturalization, what's wrong with that picture? You know, nothing's wrong with that picture. But all they see is houses. They see billions of dollars and they see, like they're talking about expansion. Well, what about our people? You've got 20,000 people on a little how many acres of land. And what do they expect us to do? They're stealing all of our land base. Where do they expect our people to go?
Well, you're and all this supposed to assimilate.
Exactly.
You're not supposed
I was just
going to
say, they had expected by now that our people would have been assimilated through their genocidal practices. that they've been doing for the last couple of thousand years against the original people. And this is something that they did not expect. They wanted us to all go away, and we're not going away. We're not ever going to go away because the spirit of our people lives within us. It's not something mm-hmm. that's a physical thing. It's a spiritual thing. And for those people, those government people, they can't understand that, that in those children, whether we're here to teach them or not, it's still going to come out. The truth is still going to come out because that spirit comes from within them.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about your culture. Explain what it means to you, because people just don't get it.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean, what it means?
Well, you're a younger generation, and you're a single mom, and mm-hmm. you know, so you have some concerns about your child, and you know, what's you're watching your land disintegrate, you're watching your culture disintegrate. I don't know how many generations in your family it's gone on like this, but, I mean, you're the next generation to take up this fight.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't use the word disintegrate, and I wouldn't use the word go away, because I don't feel like anything in my culture is leaving or like anything is being erased. I feel like there's a stronger force working to fight against its existence, but that doesn't touch me on the inside. That doesn't touch the fact that I am Ongwahoy, and that I feel a relationship with the land, and I feel a relationship with the Creator, and my daughter feels a relationship with the land and with the Creator. I think to say that our culture is disintegrating is basically admitting defeat. You know, I don't, and I would never do that, and I would never instill that in my child to say that. I cannot accept assimilation, so it won't happen. If I don't accept that it's a reality, then it won't ever manifest. And I think further to that, that Canadians have shot themselves in the foot, and the same with the government, because they expected that we would nicely assimilate into the mainstream culture, but they tried to instigate that through politics and through legislation. And that is a direct counteraction to that, because what they did with the Indian Act is they defined us as the other. Nobody is going to welcome the other into the mainstream. It just doesn't happen. The mainstream has to be willing to accept us into the mainstream for assimilation to happen. So by them creating Indians under the Indian Act, they canceled out assimilation. They just didn't realize they did it. They thought they were being aggressive.
Can we remind them of where the word Indian came from? As Doreen Silversmith said at the United Nations, you know, whoever it was that was exploring here looking for India
mm-hmm.
and didn't get there, all of a sudden called the native people Indians.
Mm-hmm. There's another explanation I was told, too, and it was indigos, and it was a Latin word of the people that were godlike. And to me, that probably sheds a little bit of a light to what that word Indian came from, is because our people have such a strong spiritual connection to the Creator. You can call him what you want. You can call him God. You can call him Buddha. You can call him whatever. To us, it's Songwaiti. So that Creator and that indigos was a word that they used because we were such a spiritual people, and that's how that word Indian came about. And I think that's probably a little bit more to the truth of where it came from. And as far as our culture and all of that, what you have today is such a stronger, I used the word resurgence while ago, because that's what's happening with this whole thing that started, and the Bank Council, like we said, has been here for 80 something years. That government system that the Canadian government developed through the Indian Act has been here for 80 something years, but they've never totally had the support of the people. When it first came in, there was 9 people that voted that system in. 9 out of how many thousands? And that was their acceptance of, oh, we wanted this Indian Act. You've got people out there saying that, you know, our people wanted it and blah, blah, blah. Well, 9 people wanted it, and that's how it came in. It was done by force. We've said it all along. The RCMP came in with their guns. They robbed us of all of our, documentation. Like, they took everything. They beat women and children. It's the same mentality that was going on back then that's happening now. Nothing has changed. And for our people, it gives us the strength to continue, and like what Nanta's saying, it's not going to disappear because the language has grown so much. The ceremonies have been kept up within those people, within those elders in the longhouse that continually look after those things for all of us younger ones to learn when it's our turn. So for them to expect us to just totally blend in with a Canadian or whatever, that was their hope. But now here we are today reminding them that Canada was built on the backs of our ancestors. Mm-hmm. It was built with our money. You know, that's another thing that really irritates me with Marie Traynor and all those ones insinuating that we're a drain on their society. Well, I'm here to tell them that they're a drain on our society because they robbed our lands. That every resource that they have within Canada belongs to our people. It originates with our people. We are the caretakers of the whole Turtle Island, and that encompasses the whole Canada, United States. It's the North American continent, and beyond that, it goes through the world. Our people had a responsibility, and our people, unfortunately, were the kind of people that shared. And look what sharing got us. Now, here we're in this situation when we want our land that rightfully ours, within even that small Haldimand tract, like we talk about, that 1 million acres, never mind the rest of Canada, but just what about this little Haldimand tract? And they're telling us that we're a drain on their society. They need to look at that picture because everything that they own, even the Upper Law Society of Canada was started with our money. The Grand River Navigation Company that came in and were supposed to be the caretakers of this money and the trust holders, well, they took it and they ran too. No one anywhere has ever been accountable to our people for the monies that were taken from these so-called land leases and so-called transfers and surrenders and sales. So when we ask for accountability, what they did is they come in and they uprooted the traditional government. That's how it all started. We wanted accountability. And today we're still looking for that accountability. And like we said, we've been 80 years with this Indian Act system. The Band Council has tried to go through the process of their lands claim department. It doesn't work. They refuse to look at it. And why today is so important is because all Ongwehoy nations of the world are looking and watching now. And they know, Canada knows, they're in a bind. They've got themselves backed into a corner. So of course they're going to hire the KKK and the skinheads and instigators to come in and disrupt so that they can turn this into a physical war. They want us to be militant. They want to start these aggressive things so that we respond. And so far we've done pretty darn good at not responding. The people, like I said, one of our men was hit that day, that Friday that everybody's talking about and they're showing all this swarming of whatever. One of our men was hit by a car. That's not being addressed. The people that got charged were the people that were hit. And it's garbage because what happens? Where do, you know, and why aren't they following through? Why isn't there an investigation on the fact that this man hit our people?
And the way that they portrayed that action of that fight, 7 people were charged, but not all those charges stemmed from that incident.
That's right.
There was one man that was charged. No, 2 of the people that were charged with things that didn't happen from that guy getting beat over the head. You know, another thing that they said on CH was they had that cameraman on the news and he was talking about what happened to him and what he said to the OPP and how the OPP weren't listening to him. And on air, he shouted out, "Those effing Indians are taking my camera." That is racist, but they let it on air. They bleeped out the swear word, but they still let it on air. And he said, and the cops didn't do anything. How can the media push that propaganda forward? That is wrong. I've made a complaint to the CRTC about it, and it bounced back to me, and they said I had to go through the Canadian Broadcasting Standards Council. So I went back through the Canadian Broadcasting Standards Council, and they said I didn't have enough information. Then they sent it back to me again, and they said we forwarded it on to CH. So I got a letter back from CH saying that we're sorry you feel that way. We choose what rules we want to abide by that are set out by the Canadian Broadcasting Standards Council. And if we, if you were offended, we're sorry that your feelings were hurt, but we don't feel we did anything wrong.
We choose which rules? Mm-hmm. No public broadcaster chooses the rules that they're going to follow. And that's just an indication of the kind of mindset that's been feeding the news to most of the citizens in Hamilton and Southern Ontario. And so that's why we asked these two ladies to come into the studio for CFMU, because you're probably not going to hear this kind of information coming through mainstream media, except maybe for the CBC, I hope. But Nanta's right about the CRTC. And there is a lot of information. This is just an aside for listeners. There is a lot of information out there. You might have to hunt a little bit. There's a few sites that do have visual footage, video footage and pictures, but audio and video, so you're there in the moment, shot by independents behind the lines that show just what these ladies are talking about, show the attitude of the vigilantes that are at the barricade. And that's where you're going to get the true image of what's going on, not by the Channel 11 cameraman who was told not to come. And is not sure who hit and lied about the OPP. This all is so far out of control.
It is. And how do they explain why they were there in the first place? You know?
Yeah, they're not like, supposed to be there. Why are they there?
They were at the Canadian Tire parking lot. How convenient. How convenient that this situation started here, it ended at the Canadian Tire, and they were already there.
There was no reason for them to be in Caledonia that day anyway.
The other individual that was across the road at Tim Hortons who, you know, luckily had his camera there ready. Like, what a setup. And I want to go a little bit further to what Nanta's saying, too, about the racism and that's being portrayed. What the federal government is doing, in a sense, by giving the Caledonia people, compensating them for their losses or what they're saying, they're actually compensating and promoting that racism by giving them money. You know, they're running around, their children are afraid, they're saying all of these things, they're saying that, you know, we're all this, you know, evil people. We're doing all these things. We're building bunkers. We're, you know, we've got weapons. I mean, I've had emails from people that tell me that these men are riding around with guns. That's garbage. Mm-hmm. We've made it a point right from the beginning, and everyone that comes to that site, every single supporter is reminded that we're here in peace. We're not going to do another Ipperwash. We're not going to do another Gunasadagi. And what those people went through in those places was hell. And, you know, to be having barbed wire fences around you and armies, tanks and guns pointed at you constantly for 90 days or whatever it was.
And tear gas.
And the tear gas and stuff. And so what we said is that as a people, we've learned that this is not how to do it. And so that the clan mothers and the women that originated that reclamation have said from the beginning, and we maintain that, we will not use weapons. And the only time any kind of force was the day after the police came in, that April 20th, they came in and tried to remove us from the site. And then a couple of days after that, you've seen men carrying clubs and stuff like that because they were afraid. They were reacting. They were attacked. And our women were attacked. I was beaten. Other elderly people were beaten. And so when those men had those clubs, it was a reactive, like a protective thing. But we talked to them and said, okay, that's enough. That's not who we are as a people. Put them away. And they did. They listened. And see, but all that you've seen on the media, again, CH and whoever was, oh, you know, you guys are carrying clubs, you know, you've got socks full of rocks, and I don't even know where that came from, but those are the kinds of things that they were saying. And I actually got upset with one of the CH reporters at that time, and I started to cry because when he was talking about us being violent, and he's saying, look behind you, you know, they're carrying clubs, you people are violent. And I lost it at a point, and I said, what about what they did to me? What about that violence? What about the fact that it took 5 cops to knock me down and that they tasered my son when he tried to help me? What about that violence? And where did it stem from? You know, and again, it all goes back to the racial discrimination that our people have put up with for all these years. And it doesn't go away. It's still out there. And Caledonia people can say that they weren't racist. We got along fine. Well, yes, we did get along fine, but how come now we're not then? How come all of this stuff is coming out now?
Well, because getting along. Getting along fine meant they ignored you and you ignored them.
Right. Mm-hmm. And as long as our money was coming into their town and we're spending those millions or whatever they're claiming that they lost, well, they lost the business because, A, they kicked us out of their arena. Mm-hmm. You know, they shot themselves in the foot there. They're doing exactly the same thing that Chateauguay did at Oka. And it was a really bad thing because it ended up almost bankrupting their town. And here the government's jumping in and saying, here's $1 million, you know, for all your losses because of these bad little Indians. Yet, how many years have we been waiting for our money? How many years have we been waiting for those lands
since the day the white man came to this continent?
Mm-hmm. That's exactly the point. And so they're real quick to compensate. You know, I guess it's who hollers loudest. Maybe we're not hollering loud enough.
Who's got the biggest butt?
Maybe now all those nations of people, like all the supportive Ongwehoe nations out there, need to start hollering and remind Canada that Six Nations is not alone. We have all the Ongwehoe nations of the world watching and waiting to see how Canada is going to resolve this.
Well, I want to point out a couple of things that you brought up. One, the situation with the tasers and the bullets, because I was there later that day. But currently, South America, the same sort of repression from corporations. You can insert gold, silver, oil, houses. It doesn't matter what the commodity, okay? They're all there because a handful of men run a corporation and they just want to make a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And South America and Brazil and places like that, the natives there are starting to take back control. Chavez has got the oil now and he's saying to the U.S., too bad about you.
That's right.
All of this comes from greed and you can go back hundreds and hundreds of years, and you're going to find the exact same ingredients as we find right here now in the Six Nations. It's just greed. It's not anything to do with humanity or society or benefiting anything. It's just dollars.
That's right.
And I have to interject that there's one point that I constantly see being overlooked, and it just annoys the heck out of me. If you were an imported immigrant from some other country, you would be allowed to keep your culture and your language, or so Canada says.
Yeah.
But since you were the original native, you're not allowed. I don't get that. But I wanted to touch on the tasers business, because a lot of people don't know what I saw up there, because it's only on independent media. There were, and some of the video that I've seen taken by some of the independents that were up there that day, there were many vans up there with smoked windows with armed, heavily armed. I don't know what they were inside those vans. And this is no kidding. If you want to see the pictures, even CKRZ Radio, the reservation radio, has a couple of pictures up there. But myself, I saw the tasers.
Mm-hmm.
Two tasers, 50,000 volts. Mm-hmm. And each cartridge that was shot into your son's back for no other reason than the fact that he's not going to stand there and watch five grown-up people pummel his mother on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
It's a natural reaction.
That's
and
right.
I spoke to him, and I waited weeks to see if any of the mainstream media would announce the fact that, yeah, they were shooting people in the back with tasers.
And it didn't happen.
So, like, did you see it coming? He laughed at me when I asked that. Well, I couldn't see it. They were behind me. Exactly.
None of the media put that out there, except the independents. And why is that?
And they all saw it. I mean, when those tasers came out, it was a swarm. I remember all kinds of press zooming in saying, oh, your shadow, don't get in my shot.
I never saw it.
Three weeks went by, so I finally put it up on Google Video. You'll find it, folks. Google Video, Hamilton Indie Media, Autonomy and Solidarity, and a few other sites if you're interested. And you will see. You will see these barbed tasers, and you will hear how much charge was in them. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, and I still have those tasers at home, too. I mean, and as far as the media, you're absolutely right, because we've been experiencing a media blackout from the beginning. They don't want to show this. They don't want the rest of the world to know. And that's why, in this day and age, I'm very grateful for the internet, because that's how our message has been able to get out there, that a lot of supporters, native and non-native, we have a lot of supporters that are getting that message out there, including, like yourself, the independent medias that are doing their best to try and to show the truth. I'm going to go and I'm going to tell you a little story, if that's okay, because you talked about the greed and how that the white man's greed has created this world that we live in. I was told a story by some of the elders in our community. They're all, like, they're past now, but it talks about the origin of man. And it talks about how when man was first made, the white man was made from the foam of the sea. The yellow man was made from the sand, and, like, you know, the yellow sand. The black man was made from the bark of the tree, and the red man was made from the red clay, the earth, okay? So that gives an explanation of our connection to the earth. But during that process, all those four beings, all those four people lived together in peace and harmony until one day a black man found a piece of shiny object on the ground. He was showing this shiny object to the other people. And the yellow man and the white man both wanted, like, the white man jumped in and he wanted to take that away from the black man. The yellow man jumped in. And so those three people, those three races, those three men fought over that shiny object. And the red man sat under the tree watching them. And the Creator come to them later, and he told them, because of their fighting over this shiny object, because of that that greed that instilled in those three men, that he was going to send them to the other corners of the world. There was three other directions that they put them in. And because the red man sat there and watched, and he didn't jump into the fight, he just sat there and watched them. And the Creator told the red man that it was his responsibility now to be the caretaker of this earth and to watch over it, and that when there's any trouble, for us to call out to the rest of the world when the trouble was coming. And that we were all given the same teachings at that time. And like I said, that's how the world began, and the four directions came about. And where that, even in today's society, you have people making those medicine wheels and those four colors, and what all that represents. But what it shows is, even at the beginning of time, what we call that story, the origin of man, that greed came from way back there in those societies. And today, again, our people are sitting calmly under that tree, watching and waiting for the for the government now, who represents that culture, to do what's right, to do what's honorable, and come back and deal with what they've done. They are guilty of crimes in their laws as well as in our laws. And why it's so hard for Canadian people to understand, and we're saying that, no, we're not subject to those laws, is because we're not. That two-row wampum that was made for our peoples when the white man first came over was made for a reason, because we had our own laws, we have our own land base, we have our culture, we have our language, we have all of those things. And when they came and tried to save us and Christianize us and all of that stuff that came with them, we said, you know, thanks, but no thanks. We don't need that. We are here and you are there. So that two-row wampum that we talk about is the basis of the relationship between the non-native and the native people of this earth. And that two rows are symbolic of our people traveling side by side on this earth, but not to interfere with one another in our governmental structure. And so what's happened throughout history is that the Canadian, now, well, it was the British Crown at the time, but once Canada was developed, it's now the Canadian government and American governments, or corporations is what they really are, corporations of the crown. What they're doing is constantly interfering with our people, jumping into our canoe when we're trying really hard to stay out of their boat. And we've been trying to. And like Nanta said, our history, our culture hasn't disappeared. It's gotten stronger in the last 20, 30 years. And so we're standing strong, and we are the next generation, like you said, the seventh generation, some people call it. Well, this is who we are as a people, and we're standing here strong, saying we do have our own culture, we do have a language, we've got a land base, we have a constitution, we have that great law, that Guiding Law, and that's our constitution. And by anyone that knows how the Canadian Constitution was developed, it was determined from what we already had, the same with the American. So when you talk about a government, the only true government on this earth is that Haudenosaunee Council, that original League of Nations, the original League of Peace. They are the rightful caretakers here, because that was the job that was given to us. And we're still trying. And it's not a racial thing, because all those four beings, those four original nations, all have a right to that peace. And that's what we put out there when we went to that Gunnestado, that sacred place that we call now, that land reclamation that we're at. We rekindled that fire of peace. We rekindled that peace to all nations of the world, including the white, including the yellow, including the black. Mm-hmm. And that is what's happening now, is that peace is being put out there, and we're offering it to the rest of the world.
And when you talk about the white man's greed, too, I think we have to remember that the original 13 colonies that came over to this country and to this Turtle Island to bring and to investigate for commodities and things like that, those were kind of like the most extreme, rich, hungry people representing Great Britain at the time. So that's a very extreme window of people that just sort of spread their ideas across the country. And that's, I think, when we talk about the white man's greed, I hope people don't interpret that as us thinking that all white people are like that, because I don't think that that's how everybody in our community feels. But we do recognize that those original greedy 13 colonies were people of the same kind of bourgeoisie mentality.
The original corporation, as we said
exactly.
In the last show. And
exactly.
That's what it is. So people, the white people, let's say, and it's a shame that we have to say there's the native people and there's the white people, but for the sake of understanding, from my viewpoint, and, you know, I didn't know anything about this until a couple of years ago, and we had our own situation in Hamilton with Red Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, was it ever hard for me to try and figure out what was going on. I didn't know what laws I was stepping on, what, mm-hmm. you know, how to behave, and it was confusing. But it can be simplified if you just look at what's going on today. Now, with the urban sprawl, and we're facing the crisis of peak oil, and we're facing crisis of buying water in bottles,
mm-hmm.
we can't breathe the air, all our resources are being just completely depleted, and you'll start to see it on mainstream shows like the Jon Stewart Show and late-night comedy shows. It's finally become joke time, that the corporations have been sawn through them, and Ken Lay's going to jail for hundreds of years. He's with Exxon, Arthur Anderson, and the hydro scam from BC. I mean, this is all these resources, you know, the horrors of the world is after these resources that man needs to live. Doesn't matter what color he is.
That's right.
Which is amazing to me that they just ignore this. So everybody needs to wake up and realize that the First Nations people and their spirituality and the way they look at the planet is the only sane way to live on this earth.
And it's the only real valid claim if you think about it. Like, a bunch of people can stand up and say stop, you know, the corporation, but the only people that have any kind of the weapon to use against the corporation is the Indigenous people, because we are the caretakers of the land.
That's right.
We're their foundation.
So if the white society in Caledonia would take a little breath and take a step back and just stop and think for a little bit, and I don't know if they're capable of doing that, but you're working for a living. How much of your tax dollars are being taken? Where do you get your water? How much is your gas? How is it that you have to have this vehicle that uses a fossil fuel to get to your job? You want to get angry at somebody. You want to point finger and yell and carry on about how much money it costs you to survive. Well, if you could just wipe all of that out of your frame of reference for a moment, and could you go into the bush and survive with nothing? No, you can't. That's because society has been set up with hurdles that somebody has to pay to exist. You have to pay to exist. But the First Nations, no matter where they are on this planet, they learned how to exist with nature as one.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to say like Ethiopians in places in North Africa where there's droughts, well, why is that? There is a reason for that, and it's not because there are silly backwards natives that don't know anything. They have to follow a certain way of lifestyle, as the Jesuit priest and that first came in and said, listen, you'll be saved if you do this.
Exactly.
You know?
And it's nothing against the Christians, but it's that whole mentality that someone else's beliefs are wrong. And that is what really bothers me, because right now, you know, we have a belief. This is who we are as a people, and we have a right to have that, to live that. And no one is over there telling Caledonia people that you don't have the right to go to church, you don't have the right to have your beliefs. But why is it when it's our beliefs that it's wrong? And as far as, like, let's talk about that taxation. Let's talk about Caledonia for a minute. They should be angry. They have every right to be angry, because they've been sold land that no one had the legal right to sell to them. They're paying taxes on land to a government that doesn't have the authority to collect them. And they're totally constantly being robbed of everything. They work hard. Sure, they work hard. And they've been miseducated to believe that all of that money that they work for now somehow has to go to us Indians because we're hollering for it. That's so wrong. They've been paying taxes. They've been putting their money and their heart and soul into a government that doesn't have the right to take those resources in the first place.
And a government that doesn't tell them the truth.
And doesn't tell them what's going on. The May 2-4 weekend of the barricade opening up is a good example. All these politicians that are there working with our people knew and understood what was going on. How come Caledonia didn't know? How come they didn't know the barricades were coming down? Nobody told them. You know, where in their system, in their political system, does the people ever get a voice? Mm-hmm. They live on that pretense. They vote those people in there. But when do they get told what's happening? And that was a really good example and an eye-opener for me that day when I was, like I said, we're standing there scratching our heads. How come we open the road and they're mad? Like, I don't understand. And it was really clear to me how Canadian government totally keeps their people in the dark. They don't tell them what's going on. They don't let them have a voice. It's all based on a facade. And it's really sad, because when I see our government and how it works and how the voice of the people is carried through those clan mothers to the chiefs, so that when a decision is made, it's made by consensus. And it's a really good feeling, and it's been a really good feeling at that reclamation site, because we're living it. That great law that we talk about and we've only been able to talk about for 80 years is now living, breathing, a working mechanism in that government. And it's really amazing to see that happening. It's history in the making right before mm-hmm. our eyes. And our children are going to be talking about this someday.
You know, one thing I also wanted to bring up is that the Caledonia Citizens Alliance group isn't reflective of the entire population of Caledonia.
Right.
There's another group in Caledonia that does support the reclamation, but do they ever get into the news?
What's their name, do you know?
Yep, they're called the Community Friends for Peace and Understanding with Six Nations. They meet once a week. They have some ideas about how they want to start discussions with just regular people from Six Nations to let them know that they support their stand. They recognize that our stand is with the government and our issues are with the Crown and the federal government.
Can you ask them to come down to the studio? And
I'm in that
You're in that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have another spokesperson.
I want another show coming up.
Well, we could just go and go and go here, as far as I'm concerned.
But that is true, and it's a good point, because a lot of Caledonia people from the beginning have been very supportive, you know, and they don't always come out now because for their own reasons. They'd probably be fearful of their own people turning on them for, mm-hmm. you know, supporting the natives.
Well, I saw those independent videos, and I'd love to see those independent videos all over mainstream TV everywhere.
The Canadian government depends on people forgetting the history of this country, and they depend on this sort of... They depend on Canadians interpreting this painted picture of Canada instead of what Canada really is made up on, and that's how they maintain state control. Mm-hmm. They promise to protect them as long as they go along with the Canada that they've painted for them instead of finding out the truth.
You can take something bad and turn it into the good. See the good that's come out of it.
I thank you ladies both very much for coming into the studio today. You've really done your community and our community a great service, in my opinion, and welcome back anytime.
Thanks for having us.
Okay.
Thank you.